Excuse, I believe. Is this Reynolds? I think Clark, I think that's who's yours.
Okay. Yeah, Association County Planning Director.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Art Clark. I'm with the Association of Oregon Counties. If you recall, Senate Bill 628 was a simple little bill which would remove the sunset clause from the 150 days that was established in the 1997 legislature, that a period of sunset was, so this would basically remove it. When you, earlier this session, passed Senate Bill 440 from this committee, it also would have done some amendments, and so the DAP 2 brings back to you the repeal of the sunset and engrosses the provisions of 440 that apply to counties at this point. So the dash twos, so we wouldn't have to go over to the House side and then bring 440 back to the Senate at this point for concurrence. So we would ask for your support of the dash two amendments and forwarding the bill to the floor with a new draft recommendation.
Okay. Thank you, Lord.
Mr. Chair, the on page 3 of the dash 2 amendment, section 4, and on page 3 and 4, the last pieces are from 440.
Okay, sure. So that's the reference to the 120 versus the 150, whichever is appropriate?
Right.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I'll move the dash twos into 628.
Senator Corcoran moves the dash two amendments to six bill, Senate Bill 628. Any discussion? Any objections? Hearing now, so ordered. Senator Corcoran.
Senate 628 is amended, the floor is due pass.
Senator Corcoran moves Senate Bill 628 as amended, the floor due pass recommendations. Any discussion? Any objections? Hearing none, clerk, call roll, please.
Senator Corcoran?
Aye.
Senator George? Senator Shannon? Senator Wyatt?
Aye.
Chair, aye. 628 pass the floor. Chair will carry. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Art. Close the workshop from 628 and we'll open our Senate Bill 467.
Ray, you're very good at that. I'm just kidding, Mr. Chair. Okay.
We have some deal.
We can move forward to reconsideration.
A lot of good things that worked out, didn't
it? Yeah, it did work out. We called 911 expecting a big old fight, and hell, they just broke
it over. Okay, go ahead. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, on Senate Bill 467, we've heard twice before, there is a dash two amendment that the members of the committee should have.
So what is 467?
And what 467 does is changes the notice requirements for local land use decisions made without a public hearing. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Dave Honeycutt from Oregonians in Action was one of the principal people in drafting this amendment and probably best suited.
Mr. Honeycutt, do you want to explain the dash twos to us, please? What is okay.
Chair Tarno, members of the committee, Dave Honeycutt, Oregonians in Action. The dash two amendments were the result of negotiations with the Department of Land Conservation and Development, specifically with Mr. Eber. It might save the committee some time if Mr. Eber came up as well.
Mr. Eber, please.
Chair Tarno, essentially what we were. The problem we're trying to solve here is twofold. Primarily, the first issue that we're trying to solve is the issue over who is entitled to written mailed notice when a local government makes a decision without holding a hearing. Under a case that came out it was either 97 or 98 out of Douglas County, the court ruled that anybody who was adversely affected and aggrieved was entitled to written mail notice. Well, the problem for the local governments is trying to figure out who's adversely affected and aggrieved, and essentially the word aggrieved has been defined by the courts to be anybody who submitted to the project. So it was impossible for local governments to determine who to mail notice to when they decided to make a land use decision without holding hearings. That was the first problem we're trying to fix. The second problem we're trying to fix is a problem over how long a person who's adversely affected and aggrieved has to appeal a decision made without a hearing. Under current law, that time period could be up to 3 years. So I could get a decision from the local government made without a hearing. I could, in reliance upon that approval, go out and borrow money, get my project cited and completed, and then for 3 years there's a time bomb that's sitting out there waiting to drop on my head. Somebody could come in and say they were adversely affected and aggrieved. They just learned about the decision or my project or what have you, and they want to appeal, and then I could be up to LUBA. My bank loan doesn't go away. The payments for my bank loan don't go away, even though LUBA has decided that maybe the local government was wrong 2 years and 11 months ago. So that was the second problem.
I learned that a court of appeals case, it was longer than 3 years.
Yeah. Yeah. Ron's got some editorial comments.
Go ahead, Ron.
I was just, Mr. Chair, Ron Eber for the Department of Land Conservation and Development. Actually, it was broader than what Mr. Honeycutt pointed out, is if you were one of these people who was adversely affected or aggrieved and local government was supposed to guess that you were supposed to get notice and they guessed wrong and they didn't get it, they could appeal forever the way the statutes were constructed.
Probably after the statute of ultimate repose in 10 years.
Yeah.
So essentially, for an extended period of time, it was possible that you could go back, that you could be subject to an appeal, even though your project's already been cited and you'd be back in reliance upon a local government permit. That's what we're trying to fix. We had a couple of work groups with the original 467, with counties, some representatives from the city and the department, and we made the -1 amendments. Unfortunately, the -1 amendments didn't solve the problem. The -2 amendments, I believe, solved the problem. They give their results of a compromise with the department, and essentially what we get out of the process is a determination that written mail notice will only go to people within a certain distance from the proposed site. It makes that clear. The adverse people who are adversely affected and aggrieved will no longer be entitled to written mail notice.
So, are those distances referred to on page 4 of the -2? From line 4 down to 9?
Chair Tarno, they are. That's correct.
Go ahead.
And the other thing that we get from our perspective is a 21-day time frame. Once the local government makes a final decision, an appeal will have to be made from that final decision within 21 days from the date of that final decision. So at the end of the 21 days, both the local government and our folks will have the certainty of knowing that their decision is final and done. I'll leave it to Ron. Do you want to explain what the department's problems or objections were and what we did to solve those?
Sure, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Just to add, the thing we wanted to be assured of when we were cutting and having this definite finality at the end of the 21-day appeal period to LUBA was to ensure that the process at the other end was more open-ended. We wanted to make sure that people who didn't get written notice but who were adversely affected and aggrieved had a definite opportunity to request a local hearing, although it's referred to in the bill as an appeal, but it's essentially their first hearing. And we wanted to make sure that there was a minimum period of time that window was open, which before this was not specified in statute. At this point, it's at 14 days. We also wanted to, particularly in the rural farm and forest zones where things are more spread out and word doesn't travel as quickly, we got the mailed notice distance expanded to from 500 feet to 750 feet. And that will pick up some more people kind of in a ripple effect, hopefully get more people aware of the decision so that they can get involved at the local level, which is the place the initial discussion over a permit should occur. So we feel that we've clarified the law and ensured that those opportunities are there, and I think Mr. Honeycutt feels that the certainty he wanted at the end of the process for, you know, once it's final after the appeal period as well.
So, to your knowledge, gentlemen, is anyone else anyone opposed to what we've done in Dash 2, to your knowledge?
Chair, Donna, you might want to call up Mr. Slatt from the county, who we were also working with. All right. Well, I don't want to speak for our so.
Well, he can speak for himself.
Right.
If you want, but that's fine. And just, anything further, Mr. Hubert or Mr. Nicholas? Questions? Okay. Gentlemen, thank you. This is work session. Mr. Slack, do you want to offer any comments on this issue, or can you help to enlighten us a little bit, or otherwise?
Mr. Chairman of the committee, my name is Art Slack. I'm with the Association of Oregon Counties, and we, too, had an interest. There was Senate Bill 631 that was referred to the committee for consideration that also dealt with this question of affected and aggrieved, and we were looking at trying to get some finality. That would be our interest also in the land use planning process. With respect to the Dash 2 amendments, I continue to have one concern at this point, and I would be happy to continue to discuss it with the parties on the House side, Mr. Chair, if you choose to move this. And the one concern is that the one additional thing they're asking counties to do is to expand the notice on farm forests from 500 feet, which we've had for a number of years, to 750 feet at this point. And I will grant you it's a small distance, but the standard has been 500 for, I can't tell you exactly, since we began to require notice at this point. And I do not see the justification at this point for a larger distance. So I'm still troubled by that. I would just indicate to the committee for the record that we will continue to discuss that with the parties and discuss it on the House.
Okay.
Thank you
for that. Questions from Mr. Schlatt? Okay. Senator Corcoran.
Move that to send to 467.
Senator Corcoran moves the Dash 2 amendments to Bill 467. Is there any further discussion? Is there any objection? Hearing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Corcoran.
Move 467 as amended to the floor and to pass.
Senator Corcoran moves on the Bill 467 as amended to the floor and defense recommendations. Is there any further discussion? Any objections? Hearing none, clerk, call the roll, please.
Senator Corcoran.
Aye.
Senator George.
Aye.
Chair Shannon?
Aye.
Senator Miles?
Aye.
Chair
Miller? Chair, Senator 467 has passed to the floor. I'm going to volunteer to carry this issue, ladies and gentlemen. Senator Clifton, please. Thank you very much.
I'll
see you. Well, okay. I'm doing it. Close the first session on Senate Bill 467 and open the public hearing and possible work session on Senate Bill 1102. Great.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 1102 requires State Parks and Recreation Department to develop a plan to establish Crissy Field in Brookings as a state park.
Is the state park here by way by chance?
Oh, Jim, please.
Mr. Chair, while we're waiting for him, I just wanted to tell you that it's a relief area land use bill because I got insulted by Senator Shields the other day for carrying the shrimp bill that Senator George set me up on. I told him it was a gumbo shrimp bill. And you know what the next one I'm assigned to carry? Road bumps. So this is really an elevation and stature by quite a bit. I really appreciate it. Thank you very much, sir.
For the record, Jim Lockwood, Government Relations Manager, Oregon Parks and Recreation Department. We are pleased to discuss Senate Bill 1102. I don't really have any formal statement. It's simply Crissy Field, the property that's referred to in the bill, is owned by State Parks. It's with an area in the South Coast that we have a master plan being developed for now. What this bill, our interpretation is, it says develop a more specific plan for this particular piece of the coast, and it would be the normal process we would lead into anyway. It's just that it will require a specific focus, and in terms of the planning for transportation, tourism, the development of the site, and kind of what way that could be developed, and so on. For the committee members' edification, it's the property at the California border along the coast, so it's way down south.
Jim, thank you. I've been talking to state parks for a number of years on this particular site. It's right at the California border, and the Parks Commission and the Parks Department is looking at creating a Welcome to Oregon type park setting.
Next to California?
Trying to attract California dollars. They come into Oregon, welcome to Oregon, and a nice park. And on the flip side, the California delegation up north is also really interested in working with our state and going together on a dual project. So my idea was just to put a little bill out there to ask the state parks to develop Christian people for the future of our state. What do you think?
To develop what?
State parks for the future of our state.
Christian people.
Christian.
Senator George, no question.
Can I have South Beach at Newport's rule?
Well, one step at a time.
Oh, geez.
This does not say we're going to fund it tomorrow or build it 10 years from now. No question.
Mr. Chair, the damage done to Oregon already by California is severe. That's point one. I know two of the committee. And point two is that, you know, I'm not sure that we want to encourage this, and it's going to make it much more difficult. Okay. Is this going to make it more difficult when Oregon secedes from the Union?
No.
Okay.
Let's see.
I don't think we'll expect to need anyway. I'm sorry.
We have a lady in the bathroom with her hand up. Mandy?
Yeah, they're called up on the committee.
Me too.
I can tell them to who. Years ago, you couldn't admit to that.
No, the chair.
Anyhow, back to your most serious point. This is a public hearing here. Off the work session. I'm going to close the public hearing and go into work session and ask someone to consider moving.
I'm the only native we're going in here.
I want to move a measly little bill to the floor with a two-pack.
Move to the 11-02-04 to the pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objections? Hearing none, the clerk call the roll, please.
Aye. I understand, Terry, if she's a native.
Aye. Sure, aye. Some of the 1102 are passed before. Is it passed recommendation?
Well, is it your baby? You want to pass on period, I mean?
Okay.
It might not go.
It might not. Okay. I'll carry the one. Close the work session on Senate Bill 1102 and open the public hearing and possible work session on Senate Bill 863, right?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 863 requires local government to make a land use decision within 90 days of receiving a decision on remand from the Land Use Board of Appeals.
Okay. This is not like the bill. Pardon me?
This comes usually for
Mr. Hancock, Mr. Chandler, we should both have spent time and then try to thank you for how you have it. I've forgotten.
Chair Tano, members of the committee, Dave Honeycutt, Oregonians in Action, speaking in support of Senate Bill 863. We've talked about this issue before. This was, at one time, a modified version of this was Sections 8 and 12 of Senate Bill 440 that were removed from Senate Bill 440 in order that the remaining portions of Senate Bill 440 could move forward while we discuss the merits of this one in a separate bill. This is that separate bill. Essentially, what we're trying to do is apply a time limit to local governments when the decision comes back to them on remand from either the Land Use Board of Appeals or a local government or the Oregon Court of Appeals or Oregon Supreme Court.
the problem, I don't know if I can talk about the problem any clearer than Judge Hazelton of the Oregon Court of Appeals did in his dissenting opinion, or in his concurring opinion in the Holland versus Cannon Beach case, and I cite that in my testimony. For the record, I'd just like to read it. This is Judge Hazelton speaking in his concurrence. Perhaps unwittingly, the legislature has created a statutory scheme that, one, requires local governments to dispose of land use applications within 120 days in the first instance, but, two, allows local governments to consign the same applications to legal limbo following successful appeals to LUBA. Mr. Holland's odyssey to LUBA, this court, the Supreme Court, this court again, and LUBA again, yielded a Pyrrhic victory. His application can now languish indefinitely before the city of Cannon Beach. If that is the legislature's intent, so be it. But to describe that result as incongruous is far too mild. A name is more like it. So essentially what we're trying to get at here is a requirement that local governments, when a case comes back to them from LUBA or the Court of Appeals or the Supreme Court, decide that case within a reasonable period of time. If they don't decide the case within a reasonable period of time, then the mandamus action that lies in the first instance, if they don't in the first instance decide within 120 or 150 days, as we just talked about with 628, that process, a similar process would apply on remand. The amendments to 863 doesn't look exactly the same as sections 8 and 12 of Senate Bill 440. We've made some amendments to it that were requested by the League of Oregon Cities. So we think with the bill you have in front of you, that's a good bill. I think the opposition, the comment from the opposition will be that it's possible that a case could come back to the local government from LUBA on a procedural issue as opposed to a substantive issue, at which point the local government will decide that they're not going to do anything for 90 days, let the applicant file a lawsuit in circuit court, and then the court won't consider that procedural issue, but just consider whether or not the applicant qualifies with the provisions of the zoning ordinance. I don't think that's going to happen in the first instance. I don't think that there'll be a conspiracy between the local governments and the applicants to try and deprive somebody from their victory at LUMA in the second place, if the person meets all the qualifications, the applicant meets all the qualifications of the zoning ordinance, which is what the court will consider, then they ought to be entitled to their permit in any event. That's why we have zoning ordinances. So we think 863 is a good bill, and I'd be glad to answer any questions. I'll turn it over to Mr. Chandler.
Mr. Chandler, go ahead.
I'm the chairman member of the committee, John Chandler, with the Oregon Building Industry Association, also here in support of Senate Bill 863. You just heard a bill, 467, in which we closed another loophole in Oregon land use law, the interminable right to appeal. This is another one. If the case comes back from LUBA under the way that courts have interpreted the law, and I believe correctly interpreted the law, it simply falls in a black hole. It comes back to local government, and local government, if they choose not to act on it, leaves the applicant with absolutely no remedy whatsoever other than to file some appeal. We believe 863 closes that loophole. It sets a reasonable time period for local government to act once the case comes back, and we believe it should be passed before due passage. I think any questions?
Questions are easy.
How much of a problem is this? How many cases, maybe in a year, come back as a remand from LUBA to a local government? I guess it's both from LUBA and the Court of Appeals.
Or the Supreme Court.
Land Use Court of Appeals or the Oregon Appellate Court.
Yeah. Chair Tarnow, Senator Corker, typically what will happen is it will come from the Supreme Court down to the Court of Appeals and then back to LUBA and then back to the, it's a step process.
Okay.
I can't give you the specific figures on how many cases come back on remand. The only evidence I can give you is anecdotal, one being this case out of Cannon Beach. Some of us refer to that as the city of Cannot Beach. But in any event, that was the case that spawned the Court of Appeals, Judge Hazelton's concurring opinion. I've also been involved in a case out of Jackson County where I had the Jackson County folks saying that they were never going to give my client a hearing. and ultimately that case was resolved, but had we not been able to resolve that, you know, essentially if push came to shove, I think they could never give my, they could have never given my folks a hearing and we'd be stuck. There wouldn't be anything we could do. So I can't tell you how many local, I can't give you figures as to how many local governments do that, but obviously Judge Hazelton thought it was a problem, and from my personal experience, I think it is one as well.
Just the second question would be sort of along the same vein, the procedural versus the substantive. If you don't know how many cases, then you won't know how many of which, or what the predominant type is. Is it usually substantive or is it usually procedural?
Chair Tarno, Senator Corcoran, I can't give you the breakdown percentage-wise and figures, but I can tell you that a procedural remand, I think, in my opinion, a procedural remand is sort of a pyrrhic victory as well, because if you meet all of the qualifications under the zoning ordinance, but there's a procedural problem, and it's remanded back to the local government can fix the procedural, they just comply with whatever the procedural defect is. But the parties are stopped from raising any of the substantive arguments that have already been decided by LUBA. And so essentially, you get the thrill of having the case come back on remand, but at the same time, it's local government just fixes whatever the procedural problem was and approves the same. If you complied with all the provisions of the zoning ordinance, they just turn around and approve you again. And so you really don't accomplish much.
And you got to fight the substantive fight.
Well, but you couldn't fight the substantive fight because the substantive issues would have already been decided by LUBA the first time the case went up on appeal. So that's why I think it's kind of a third case.
If I may, Mr. Chairman, in response to Senator Corcoran's question, I want to make it real clear that most local governments act in good faith. When the cases come back, they do process them in a timely fashion. They do their best to keep the process moving. We're not dealing with a horrendous number of these. One or two is plenty. And what we have in the current law is the ability for local government to just actually sandbag an application that they don't want to hear. And Cannon Beach clearly did it. Jackson County did it. I know of one other case, and I think I mentioned it to you in the earlier testimony. And I'm not clear on the city, so I won't mention it, but I believe it to be a true story, that the city attorney advised the city council they could deny the application, let it go to LUBA, and then let it sit on remand.
So this does remove the discriminatory aspect of the law that currently stands there.
It closes, it makes the local, gives a timeline for the local government act, and that I think is very important, if only to handle those two or three instances where an application just gets lost on purpose.
Any questions for each of them? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Rindy?
Okay.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Bob Rindy with the Department of Land Conservation and Development. The department definitely concurs with the description of the problem. We have ourselves noted in the past, and as we did in our testimony on Senate Bill 440, that this loophole needs to be closed. What my testimony before you indicates is our concern is with how it's going to be closed under this bill. On remand from LUBA, and remember a case coming back from LUBA might have gone all the way to the Supreme Court and then come back and remanded back down. The bill would establish a process where that if the local government doesn't act on that case, it goes to the circuit court. But rather than giving the circuit court a broad authority to in some way compel the local government to make a decision or to act in a certain amount of time, what's already in the statute is a provision that was constructed for a different purpose. And it simply says the circuit court must approve the permit if it doesn't violate a provision of the comp plan. And what that leaves out is that things may have been remanded for different purposes. Mr. Honeycutt mentioned for a procedural reason. And that, of course, is a reason for a lot of remands, but I want to point out that if something has been remanded for a procedural reason, it's not just a matter of, well, you just follow the procedures and you approve it, because the procedural glitch may very well have resulted in certain parties being unable to raise substantive issues. So if if the local government gave the wrong notice or something of that nature and people weren't able to raise their issues, you've got a whole set of substantive issues that were never able to be raised before. And now they're lying in the circuit court rather than at LUBA, which is where we want land use issues to go. The circuit court having no timelines. And as I mentioned, under the statute, no authority to do anything except grant the permit. So what we're proposing here is in Senate Bill 440 was the result of a work group that LCDC established during the interim. We involved a broad range of interests. It's too bad that work group didn't reach get conclusion on these issues, but I think that's the way to resolve this because I think the problem is probably something we could fix quickly. We raised these issues on 440. We weren't involved in trying to draft this bill. If we had been, we would have simply asked that the circuit court be given the requirement that they deal with the issues on remand, that they in some manner have the authority or the requirement to deal with the remand issues rather than simply a very narrow yes or no decision-making authority. With that, I'll answer any questions.
Thank you. Okay, Mr. Rooney, questions? Well, thank you very much. Mr. Swindell.
Chairman Tarnow and members of the committee, Charlie Swindell, on behalf of 1000 Friends of Oregon, I will also endorse the prior witness's testimony about the problem. And I think it's a rare problem, but just one or two instances is enough. The local government needs to have the proper motivation and incentive to deal with these decisions when they come back on remand. But I'm going to endorse the testimony of Bob Rindy that the mandamus hammer to bring about that resolution is not the appropriate remedy. I testified on another bill and noted that many people, not just 1000 Friends, share the concern that using the circuit court as a super tribunal or as a super judicial planning commission is a very poor way to resolve land use decisions. And when we're saying that the concern under the bill is that the local government may choose not to act on remand, knowing that the applicant can simply go to circuit court and get approval required or mandated by the circuit court. That's not to suggest that the local government would have a nefarious motive to try and do something like that. It's entirely possible. It seems to me it's entirely possible for a local government for that to happen kind of accidentally or for any other reason by inaction. That's something that could possibly happen. Also to take issue with some testimony in support of the bill, the circuit court does have only a very limited review jurisdiction. There could be inconsistent fees with state law, which the circuit court is precluded from considering. There could be, as Mr. Rindy pointed out, not only the procedural errors, but in addition to those, findings requirements that may be applicable, and that again, because of a procedural error, no party was able to raise at the local level. Perhaps LUBA didn't address all the issues that were raised to it when it remanded. The circuit court needs to be subservient to that remand that LUBA issued. If LUBA has issued a remand, the circuit court must be, whatever final form this bill takes, the circuit court must be required to address that remand issue and be subservient to the issue that, or the remand that LUBA issued. In conclusion, I would point out that through the handiwork of John Chandler, we have provisions in law now that impose a penalty against local governments for failing to act timely, which does not involve the circuit court. Rather, it involves a refund of some or all of the application fees. And 1000 Friends would suggest that using a remedy of that nature, perhaps in conjunction with an award of attorney fees to the applicant who's facing the dilatory local government, may be appropriate and certainly an adequate motivation to get the local government to act on remand. And we think that remedy would be much more desirable than using the circuit court mandamus hammer, which I think needs to be used as sparingly as possible in the land use law.
Okay. Mr. Attorney Wild, any questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to talk about Section 4, if we could, because it deals with LUBA remanding a decision to a city and not to a circuit court, but to a city. And so if LUBA has the ability to remand it to the city, is it not talking about the very issue that that Mr. Chandler and Mr. Honeycutt brought forward, because this is not going to the circuit court for the decision, it's going to the city, and it's part of Section 4, and it certainly would be within the power of LUBA to send it back to the city, would it not?
Chairman Tarno and Senator Wild, LUBA can only remand back to the city. It can never send a decision to straight to circuit court except for some very extraordinary cases that have nothing to do with this bill.
Good idea. Thank you. So, in fact, it has gone back to the city, and the city then is required to make their decision based on why it was sent back. And yet, all of the discussion about the difficulties have been with the circuit court, but in fact, the city will be looking at what LUBA has directed them to look at. And so I'm baffled why you're discussing entirely the circuit court when, in fact, all of Section 4 is dealing with the city's handling of the issue in a timely manner.
Chairman Tarno and Senator Wild, the remedy under the bill is that the mandamus jurisdiction of the circuit court will be invoked when the city does not respond to the remand. I anticipate that the cities and counties will respond to the remand in a timely manner like they do in most cases. This bill has to deal with those cases when they don't respond in a timely manner. The remedy under the bill is to invoke the circuit court jurisdiction.
Could I continue? But would that not be a great ability to stimulate the city to actually then take action so that the circuit court would not take over and more or less make the city be very interested in dealing with this in a timely fashion?
Chairman Tarno and Senator Wild, there is one avenue, one route to which could be used to motivate the city, yes, but I think that there is an inferior choice of motivation for the city. There are other options available. It's possible that the city may neglect, for some reason, without any ill will or nefarious purpose, may neglect to get to the matter on remand in time, and they may not want the circuit court to get their hands on it, but that has happened accidentally. It's also possible with some local governments that they would indeed say, let's wash our hands of this. We don't have to act on it. Let's go ahead and let the circuit court order approval in this case.
Mr. Chair, just comments. It seems to me by the suggestion of refund the fees or that sort of thing, that would be a really easy way for a city to say, we don't want this developer in our town. Therefore, we're going to put them through this route. They're going to pay their fees. They're going to go through the appeals. It's going to get sent back. And you know what? The worst that can happen is we'll just give them their fees back and they can't build. I mean, I don't think that's the appropriate way of dealing with this. It is to require them, and if you are incapable of doing it in a timely fashion, give it to another governing body to deal with it. Or, in this case, the judicial body. But, I've seen how governments, local governments, can be very selective in those they help and those they hurt.
Thank you, Senator. Thank you, Mr. Swindell. Mr. Honeycutt, you want to address some of the issues that's been raised? I think it might be a good idea if you did that.
Chair Tarno, members of the committee, Dave Honeycutt, both issues I think I can address. There was an issue that we ought, a suggestion that the circuit court's jurisdiction on remand issues ought to be expanded not just to the substantive issues, whether you meet the qualifications under the zoning ordinance, but also to the procedural issues that were the reason for the victory at LUBA. The problem with doing that is if the circuit court considers the process issues, then essentially the mandamus remedy has no meaning because we would never win. Obviously, LUBA decided the process issues. The circuit court would decide them in the same way. So the local government would then say, well,
we got remanded on a process issue, you can go ahead and file your writ of mandamus, but the judge is going to decide the process issue the same way Luba did. You'll never win. So we're not going to do anything for 90 days. At the end of 90 days, go ahead and file your writ of mandamus, but you can't win. And we'll never make a decision on the project. That's the problem with that solution. So that won't work. The circuit court needs to be limited in their review to what they're limited to under the 120-day rule, and that is that the guys qualify with the requirements of the zoning ordinance and comp plan. And if they do, they're entitled to their approval. Number two, the parties can intervene or the opposition can intervene in the circuit court matter and raise their substantive arguments in the circuit court matter. So if a mandamus action is filed, then if there's opposition, those folks are certainly free to ask the circuit court to move to intervene in the circuit court. They can raise their arguments to the circuit court judge. So I don't think we're depriving folks of their hearing, and they'll just be limited to does this person meet the qualifications under the zoning ordinance? If they do, then they get approved. If they don't, then they don't get approved. That's what the circuit court judge will decide. It's the same thing that the cities and the local governments decide.
Any questions? Thank you very much. I'm inclined to want to push this thing out, but I'm wondering if you guys can continue the dialogue with LCDC and working out the differences on this thing. And I don't know if I can or if it cannot be done, but I'd like to move progress along with it if I could, gentlemen. And you guys just keep in contact with the single little house side and see what you can do to improve. Well, close the public hearing, and we are in discussion on Senate Bill 863. Senator George?
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move Senate Bill. On the right
page? Yes, 863. The floor of the due pass. So, George, in the 863, the floor of the due pass recommendations are in further discussion. Any objections? 39 clerk, call the roll, please.
Jerry Cochran. Jerry George. Aye. Jerry Shannon.
Jerry Wiles.
Aye. Chair Rice, in the 863, pass the floor of the due pass recommendations. Senator George, Jerry, please.
I think Senator
Wilder,
he really has a grip on it.
Oh, Jerry will have fun. Might as well let him do the lifting for him.
I think Wilder has been on
this one. Senator George, you carry this bill first, please?
Senator
Wilder has
carried this bill. Senator Wilder. I'll carry it over there.
Senator Wilder has carried the bill. Close the first session on 863. Open the public hearing. Yeah, open the work session only on Senate Bill X615. And we did have a couple of gentlemen sit down and reach a consensus on how we can work this thing. I'm very impressed. And I don't think it's going to be a really good bill. I'd like to have Mr. Rindy and Mr. Chandler step forward to work this. And maybe, Bob, you can just explain what the amendments to the 615 is.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Bob Rindy with the Department of Land Conservation and Development. What we are proposing is to amend this bill so that cities up to 10,000 in population or those areas of counties inside a UGB that contain a population less than 10,000 may request of LCDC that all or part of the administrative rule or goal that has to do with application planning be waived for that city. We, as we testified previously, there are 12 or 13 cities already that have requested and received that exemption. Currently, though, that exemption is only available to areas less than 2,500. So what we would simply do is raise that number to 10,000. And then, Mr. Chandler, you might talk about the other provisions we added in on reporting. We had talked about in some way getting back to you.
Mr. Chairman, this is John Chandler, Oregon Building Realty Association. In addition to what Mr. Rindy has already mentioned to you, the first section of the bill has been deleted of the original 615 in favor of the raising the bar 10,000 for the transportation planning rule jurisdictions. Section 2, we felt was important, and the department agreed
to report back next session on how many of these exemptions they've approved, because we want to make sure that people that come in and ask for this relief from the transportation planning rule are actually listened to as a commission, and we believe that this will be a good way of double-checking that. Good bill, good amendment, urgent passage.
Okay, so one of the last two amendments will be all intent purposes and all that.
Yes, that's correct, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. I'm going to ask if any gentleman will move the dash two amendments to Senate Bill 615.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move the dash two amendments to Senate Bill 615.
Senator George moves the dash two amendments to Senate Bill 615. Is there any discussion? Any objections? Hearing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move Senate Bill 615 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator George moves Senate Bill 615 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any further discussion? Any objections? Hearing none, clerk, call the roll, please.
Mr. President, Senator George.
Aye.
Senator Turner, Senator
Lyons. Aye. Senator Chair, 615 is passed to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and the chair will carry. Close the work session on 615. And we're all through. So we're done. And are we just in recess until?
No, we haven't done anything this way. You can close out the meeting.
Close the afternoon committee meeting. We end it again at 6 o'clock tonight on additional bills, and we'll go until 8 o'clock p.m. Thank you very much.